Good afternoon, listeners. This is the Dogs Program. We're here every Saturday, 12 noon on the dot, to defend and promote public education. And we've got a very interesting program for you because our public school teachers are fed up and there's going to be a stop work meeting. Let's hear about it, shall we, with our press release 1064 from Andy.
Thanks, Jean. And welcome to the Australian Council for the Defence of Government Schools press release number 1064. Public school teachers are fed up and will stop work on the 24th of March 2026. 98% of Victorian public school teachers, principals and education support staff who are Australian Education Union members have voted in support of taking stop work action over low pay and excessive workloads. President of the Australian Education Union Victorian branch, Justin Mullaly, said that after 8 months of negotiations with no offer at all, the Allan government has left Victorian public school teachers, principals and support staff with no choice but to stop work. Public school teachers, principals and support staff will stop work on the 24th of March for the first time in 18 years under a Labor government because of the failure of the Education Minister Ben Carroll and Premier Jacinta Allan to deliver pay and conditions which respect school staff and the important work that they do, as well as fully fund public schools, Mr. Mullaly said. This decision has not been taken lightly and we keenly understand the impact this can have on parents. But we have arrived here because the Allan Labor government is continuing to disrespect public school teachers, principals and support staff by not putting any offer on the table, let alone a decent one. The Victorian government has deliberately denied Victorian public schools $2.4 billion in funding through to 2031, cementing our schools as the lowest funded in Australia by a long way. It is a joke for this government to call Victoria the education state when teachers, principals and support staff continue to be undervalued and underpaid. Following the vote of union members, the Fair Work Commission has given the green light for public school teachers, principals and support staff to take protected industrial action, which includes stopping work for 24 hours on the 24th of March. Back to you, Jean.
This is the grassroots reaction to what's been going on. But here we have the AAU representative encouraging the grassroots teachers to go on strike.
G'day, folks. Well, the ballot results are in, and it is a massive green light for the stop work action on the 24th of March. Over 98% of members have said yes to stop work action. Overall, 77% of members voted in the ballot for protected industrial action, and on average, 95% of members said yes to the actions listed on the ballot. We are ready to go. There is a really strong feeling amongst AU members that the government needs to step up, that the government needs to value their work, that the government needs to properly fund our schools. The ball is in the Premier's court. We will stop work on the 24th of March, but what we need the government to do is deliver a fair and decent agreement. Stop Victorian teachers being the lowest paid in the country. Make sure education support and principals are properly valued. Resolve the issues with workload. And of course, they've got to fully fund our public schools. It's not okay for Victorian public schools to be the lowest funded in the country. Now, there are three things that everybody needs to do. We need to stop work on the 24th of March. We need to make sure that we turn up to the rally at Trades Hall in Carlton. Go on the march up to Parliament so we can send a direct message to the government. And we need to get more people to join our union. Thousands have joined in recent weeks. Congratulations if you've got on board recently, but you need to talk to your colleagues. We need everybody contributing to this campaign. We need everybody to get on board and join the AEU. I wanted to tell you about all the problems with the state government's pay and conditions offer. In short, the problem is that they only are offering 18% to teachers and to principals and 14% to education support staff. That offer is below standard. That offer is far below what colleagues in other states and territories currently get paid. It's unacceptable. What makes their offer even worse is that they want to uncap face-to-face teaching, no maximum. They want to make sure that teachers do more meetings, no cap on meetings. They also want to introduce an allowance for overtime. Get rid of time in lieu, which means that you would get paid an allowance once a year with an uncapped number of overtime hours you could be required to do. This is all unacceptable, and there's nothing really on workload that would properly address the excessive challenges of administration and other work that teachers have to do. So, what are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to stop work. Next Tuesday, you need to get on board. You need to stop work, and you need to make sure you come to the Trades Hall at 10:30 a.m. You need to rally with us together, tens of thousands of us, and we will march together to Parliament House to send our message directly to the Education Minister. Ben Carroll needs to step up. He needs to pay attention. He needs to put a decent deal on the table. We also need to make sure that every one of our colleagues joins the union. So ask a colleague who is not joined today to get on board, because we are absolutely stronger together.
Well, thank you very much for all that. Although we've got Labor parties in both federal and state, they are not giving enough money to our public systems of education. Over to you, Dale.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article by Caitlin Cassidy that was in The Guardian. Massive underfunding blamed as students enrolled in Australian public schools falls to new low. As thousands more students head to private schools, advocates hope new government funding deals might draw families back to the public sector. In Sharon Brownlee's experience, it's when their kids reach the final years of primary school that a lot of parents start to ask one another the same question. Where are you going to send your kids to high school, public or private? She said. For Brownlee, the president of the New South Wales Central Coast Parents and Citizens Association, PNC, her decision was a no-brainer. You think, why would I pay all this money for them to go out of their zone to have friends that don't live near them when you can just as easily go to the local public school and be proud of where you are, she said. Parents like Brownlee, however, appear to be becoming rarer. The percentage of students enrolled in public schools has fallen to another record low as thousands of students fled the system in favour of the private sector, according to Australian Bureau of Statistics data. Over the past 10 years, enrolments in independent schools grew at more than six times the rate of government schools, which went backwards last year for the first time since 2022, Guardian Australia analysis shows. In total, 4.1 million students were enrolled in schools across Australia in 2025, with 62.8% of them enrolled in government schools, a decline on 63.4% the previous year. About 20% of students were enrolled in the Catholic system and 17.2% in independent schools, which recorded a combined increase of 21% between 2021 and 2025. At the same time, government schools' enrolments dropped by 0.4%. The number of students enrolling in government schools experienced a decrease of 0.2% in 2025, with 6,109 fewer students in the public system compared with 2024. In addition, 35,021 students enrolled in private schools during the same period, a 2.3% increase. The Save Our Schools convener Trevor Kobold said the massive underfunding of public schools was a key factor in the shift to the private sector. The underfunding means that public schools have far fewer human and material resources than overfunded private schools, he said. Public schools do the heavy lifting in education but are not being resourced to do the job. Only Western Australia, Victoria and the ACT experienced growth in public school enrolments from 2024 to 2025 of 1%, 0.5% and 0.5% respectively. The largest declines were in Tasmania, down 1.7%, New South Wales, down 0.9% and South Australia, down 0.9%. Private schools now account for 38% of students in New South Wales, up from 30% in 2000, along with 41% in the ACT and 39% in South Australia. The Chief Executive of Independent Schools New South Wales, Marjorie Evans, said much of the enrolment growth was in low and mid-fee faith-based schools in Sydney's fast-growing suburbs, including the South West, Blacktown, Baulkham Hills and Hawkesbury. Parents may also be influenced by more practical considerations. More than 85% of independent schools are co-educational and two-thirds combine primary and secondary into one school, she said. Many families prefer these types of environments for their child. National enrolment analysis by Independent Schools Australia painted a similar picture, with growth strongest in outer metropolitan areas and regional communities, as well as at Christian and Islamic schools and special assistance schools. Professor Passy Salberg, an educational leadership expert at the University of Melbourne, said the long-term decline in government school enrolments had accelerated in recent years, indicating confidence in public education may be under pressure. Australia already has one of the most socio-educationally segregated school systems among advanced countries, he said. Further separation of children into schools characterised by distinct cultural and socioeconomic profiles risks undermining efforts to build social cohesion, inclusion, and mutual understanding through schools. For Brownlee, the public education system needs to tell their successes and what they're achieving to draw families back. I don't think they told those stories very well before, she said, and I don't think there was much consistency between every public school. Some did much better than others. Now, with increased funding, every school is going to be able to do the Premier's debating challenge. Every school will have the extras, whereas in the past they didn't. The ABS figures also showed the proportion of students staying in school until year 12 increased annually for the first time since 2017, and student-to-teacher ratios fell to a decade's low of 12.8 students to one teacher. About 81.3% of students stayed at school from year 7 until year 12, up from 79.9% in 2024, but still below a 2017 high of 84.8%. Retention rates were significantly higher for independent schools, 99.1%, than government schools, 75.4%. There were 283,611 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander school student enrolments in 2025, 3.2% more than in 2024, and accounting for 6.8% of all students. The Federal Education Minister Jason Clare said the increase in students finishing high school was good news, but there was more work to do. That's what the agreements we've signed with every state and territory are all about, he said. Back to you, Jean.
Thank you, Dale, and let's have a bit of a break, shall we?
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
We hope you're still listening to the Dogs program. And here we have Sol with a very interesting article. You might have heard some of it before last week, but it was on the Save Our Schools website. So we thought we would remind you that public education is all about our cohesive society, which we are starting to lose. Over to you, Sol.
Thanks, Jean. This article was published by SOS Australia, was written by Pazi Salberg and Trevor Kobold, and is entitled We Need Stronger Public Education to Promote Social Cohesion. Australia has long been regarded as a successful multicultural society, integrating people from many different social and cultural backgrounds. Now, however, the sense of shared community that underpins this success is showing signs of strain. Racism and cultural intolerance have re-emerged as pressing social concerns. Strengthening public education is one of the most practical ways Australia can build social cohesion and counter racism. According to the Scanlon Foundation's Mapping Social Cohesion 2025 report, social cohesion in Australia is at its lowest level since it was first measured in 2007. The survey also reveals stark differences in attitudes towards immigrants depending on their country of origin. For example, the report found a high proportion of adults have negative attitudes towards immigrants from Asia and Africa. Only 3-4% of adults feel that way towards immigrants from the UK, Italy, and Germany. Another survey by Reconciliation Australia found that in 2024, 54% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders experienced racial discrimination in daily life, up from 39% a decade earlier. Attitudes towards immigrants of certain religious faiths are also deteriorating. The proportion of adults with negative views of Muslims is high at 35%, up from 27% in 2023. Sentiment is also worsening toward people of Hindu, Jewish, and Sikh faiths, although to a much lesser extent. A Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion has been established to investigate anti-Semitism and to recommend on how to strengthen social cohesion. It is required to produce an interim report by April 30 and a final report by 14 December this year. It is timely, therefore, to highlight the critical role of public education in promoting social cohesion and countering all forms of racism and religious intolerance. Public schooling, built on the principles of free, secular, and non-discriminatory education, serves to break down class, ethnic, and religious differences. As the Prime Minister emphasised in his address to the Federal Conference of the Australian Education Union, public schools are open to everyone. Education in general, through national curricula and locally designed teaching practices, creates inclusive and safe school environments that supports the well-being and sense of belonging of all students. International institutions such as the United Nations and Human Rights Commissions recognise that schools are important in fostering healthy relationships, tolerance and mutual respect in schools and in society. And one of the original purposes of public education was to promote social cohesion. Public schools were established in Australia in the 19th century to overcome bitter divisions between Catholics and Protestants. Ever since, the system has been in the front line of development of a multicultural society. Public schools have played an important role in the successful integration of Italian, Greek, Eastern European, and other migrants since World War II. Because these schools are free, at least for the most part, secular and non-discriminatory, they are shared learning environments of students from different class, ethnic, cultural, and religious backgrounds. When students grow, play, and learn alongside peers from different social and religious backgrounds, they encounter different perspectives and ways of life. These everyday interactions help reduce stereotypes and build positive relationships. Decades of social science research shows that regular, meaningful contact between young people from different backgrounds, the common condition of non-selective public schools, reduces prejudice and helps cultivate the habits of respect on which social cohesion depends. The principle is pure common sense. When students meet one another as equals, work together and share common goals, stereotypes soften, suspicion eases, and mutual understanding grows. Diverse school communities create precisely these conditions. Compared with socially and culturally more homogenous school settings, they are more likely to foster cross-group friendships, diminish bias, and strengthen intergroup trust. Recent experimental studies add weight to this evidence, showing that school-based programs can measurably improve attitudes towards difference and make students more supportive of diversity beyond the classroom. A large body of research highlights that ordinary positive interaction between students from different cultural, ethnic, and religious backgrounds is one of the most reliable ways to reduce prejudice and build respect. As a recent peer-reviewed meta-analysis concluded, intergroup contact provides a reliable means of reducing prejudice, even in the face of group threat and discrimination. This shows how diverse, inclusive school environments are an educational asset in cultivating the tolerant, cohesive communities Australia urgently needs. Research undertaken by the Australian National University in public schools in this country confirms that when schools intentionally engage with issues of racism as part of their regular school days, attitudes can change for the better. One recent evaluation of the SOAR, Speaking Out Against Racism, program, a whole school anti-racism initiative, found that teachers and students thought it raised teacher confidence to discuss and address racism, student peer pro-social norms and school climate, students' racial literacy, awareness of racism, and knowledge and confidence to intervene proactively to address racism at school. Strengthening diverse public schooling is therefore not just a question of system design. It is one of the most practical evidence-based tools we have for confronting intolerance, including anti-Semitism, and reinforcing the social fabric that holds a pluralist democracy together. It's hard to think of any other social institution that creates such opportunities to bring together large numbers of young people from diverse backgrounds and promote socially coherent communities. However, the role of public education has been weakened over the past 25 years by the steady expansion of private schooling and increasing social segregation between schools. For example, Australia's school systems today educate nearly 900,000 more children than they did at the start of the century, a growth of roughly one quarter of the entire school populations. Most of that growth, over 500,000 students or 58%, was in private schools. Recent statistics show that the flow of students from public school to private school is intensifying. Since 2000, the number of public schools fell by 234, while the number of independent schools increased by 229, and Catholic schools by 63. There has also been a significant shift within the private sector. The proportion of private school students in the independent sector increased from 36% to 46%, and dropped in Catholic schools from 64% to 54%. Today, there is a growing number of private religious schools: Catholic, Anglican, Presbyterian and Methodist, Lutheran, Evangelical and Fundamentalist Christian, Jewish, Islamic, Greek Orthodox, Seventh-day Adventist, Plymouth Brethren and Buddhist. Australia's first Hindu school is planned to open in 2027, and approval has been given for the first Sikh school. Parents may have many reasons, shaped by their own circumstances and values, for choosing faith-based or independent schools over public schools. It reflects the preference of some families to have their child educated according to their faith, and avoid heightened societal prejudice against a range of religious and racial groups. At the same time, it is important to recognise the substantial work undertaken by public schools across Australia to create safe, inclusive environments that support the well-being of all students. OECD analysis of the PISA 2018 data shows that countries with larger private school sectors tend to have more socio-culturally segregated school systems, meaning students are less likely to encounter peers from different backgrounds in school. This is the same condition that research consistently links to weaker development of tolerant and inclusive civic attitudes. as the Assistant Minister for Citizenship, Customs and Multicultural Affairs, Julian Hill observed recently in a speech to the McKell Institute. A big question is the growth in faith-based schools and homeschooling, which mean that it is increasingly possible to grow up in Australia from prep to year 12 without ever really mixing outside your faith or even ethnic group. Funding policy has also contributed to this trend. Over the past 15 years, government funding per student has increased far more rapidly in private schools than in public schools. This imbalance has accelerated enrollment shifts and increased social segregation between schools. For example, since 2009, funding per student adjusted for inflation has increased 20% for public schools and more than double that pace for independent and Catholic schools. Social segregation is likely to increase under the current funding arrangements. At the moment and in coming years, public schools in all jurisdictions except the ACT are significantly underfunded. When public schools remain underfunded, their capacity to bring young people together across social and cultural divides is inevitably weakened. The Royal Commission must examine the breakdown of social cohesion in Australia. It will also have to investigate the impact of related economic and social factors. Income inequality is high in Australia, and large parts of the population suffer financial, housing, health, and educational stress. Recommending ways to build social cohesion and combat racism is a particularly challenging task for the Commission. One thing it can do is to highlight the benefits of public education in building social cohesion, mutual respect, and core human values in our society. Comparative research shows that education systems with comprehensive schooling, democratic classroom climates, and strong civic education, for example, those in Finland and other Nordic countries, are associated with higher levels of civic knowledge and stronger support for intercultural understanding, equality, and social inclusion among students. Simply adding more lessons against racism and intolerance to the curriculum is not, on its own, enough. What matters equally is how school systems are organized to serve the true purpose of education. Diverse, well-rounded public schools remain amongst the most powerful institutions in Australia for bringing young people together across social, cultural, and religious divides. Therefore, governments must accelerate the transition to genuine full funding of all public schools. Having a strong public education system is not only an educational priority. It is an investment in the kind of society Australians want to live in. A nation grounded in mutual respect, democratic values, and shared belonging. Back over to you, Jean.
Many thanks, Sol. And now we have another interesting article about 20,000 teachers who are being locked out from teaching. And this is extraordinary given the great lack of teachers in Australia at the moment. Over to you, Dara.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article by Brett Hennebury in The Educator. 20,000 Australian teachers locked out by broken system. While the national coverage continues to focus on acute shortages, particularly in regional and disadvantaged schools, new analysis shows that the nation's teaching workforce could grow by 4% if Australia revamps its skills recognition system. According to Activate Australia's Skills campaign, 20,590 qualified teachers are currently underutilised nationwide. That equates to a potential 3.7% expansion of the workforce at a time when schools report growing teacher shortages and rising burnout. For an industry facing these omni-crises, the question isn't just where are the teachers, but why thousands of qualified teachers aren't fully participating in the system. According to Violet Rumiolotis, Activate Australia's skills spokesperson and CEO of campaign convener SSI, A big part of the problem lies with Australia's skills recognition system. Australia's costly system for recognising overseas acquired skills and qualifications locks teachers out of the jobs they're qualified for because of barriers unrelated to their skills, excessive fees, unnecessary red tape, slow and confusing processes, and a lack of accountability, Rumia Lotus told The Educator. Many teachers have already undergone a skills assessment to get their skilled visa in the first place, but having moved here, instead of teaching reading and writing and arithmetic, they're working in retail, stacking shelves, or driving rideshare. To address this, the Activate Australia's Skills campaign is calling for four practical solutions that they believe could help get migrant teachers into the classroom. Firstly, we're calling for one national governance system to be established for all overseas skills and qualifications recognition, including a commissioner to make the system faster, fairer, and more affordable, Rumia Lotus said. There must also be a more joined-up system that links skills recognition for migration purposes with licensing and accreditation for employment purposes. The campaign is also calling for practical measures to cut through financial and bureaucratic barriers that prevent skilled migrants from returning to the professions they're trained for. Financial support must be provided for individuals to remove cost barriers, and an online portal with all the information so people know what they need to do, Rumia Lotus said. Our campaign is also calling for migrant employment pathway hubs, or career gateways, with skills recognition navigators to guide people through the recognition process and get them working in their professions again. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you very much for that, Dale. And the privatisation of our education system in Australia, which started back in the 1980s, once again, it was the Labor Party that introduced it. And of course, it was increased by particularly the Federal Liberal coalition government. But it started with having fee-paying international students. But now we treat our international students like ATMs. Let's hear about it, shall we?
International students accuse Australia of treating them like ATMs after fees for one visa double without warning. Union says students blindsided after non-refundable visa fee rose from $2,300 to $4,600. And this was published in The Guardian, written by Caitlin Cassidy. International students say they feel like ATMs after the federal government quietly doubled application fees for temporary graduate visas, making Australia's costs the most expensive in the world for graduates hoping to stay onshore after completing their studies. The non-refundable visa rose from $2,300 to $4,600 without prior warning on Sunday, placing Australia well in excess of competitors, including New Zealand, equivalent to Australian $1,406, Canada, Australian $262, the UK, $1,665 Australian dollars, and the US, $661 Australian dollars. The increase, effective immediately, does not apply to eligible Pacific Island and Timor-Leste citizens or students who studied in regional areas. The temporary graduate visa allows international students who have completed eligible qualifications at Australian institutions to live and work full-time in the country after their studies. Jimmy, who did not want to use his surname, is one of thousands of graduates whose student visa is set to expire on the 15th of March after completing studies in December. The engineering graduate from a prestigious Australian university said he was devastated to log onto the Home Affairs website and find visa application costs had suddenly doubled with no transitional grace period for pre-existing students. It sets a dangerous precedent where the government can bypass fairness at its whim to the detriment of vulnerable groups, he said. Treating us as an ATM at the 11th hour is a massive breach of trust that severely damages Australia's international reputation. The National Union of Students, NUS, International Officer Aria Massoud said the decision to hike the visa application fee without student consultation meant many graduating students were uncertain if they could afford to remain in Australia. Being blindsided by the country that over 800,000 current students have called their home for years sends a clear message to international students about their standing in Australian society, she said. We are regarded as ATMs to funnel into a multi-billion dollar industry instead of human beings being forced into abandoning their lives and careers they have built here. A spokesperson for the Department of Home Affairs said information about the increase to the visa application was provided on the 1st of March via its website. They said Australia continued to offer generous post-study work rights and highly qualified graduates who no longer wanted to apply for a temporary graduate visa continue to have access to other migration pathways. The changes are the latest in a series of Commonwealth reforms to the international student sector. In mid-2024, Home Affairs more than doubled the price of the non-refundable visa fee for international students overnight, from $710 to $1,600. At the same time, the federal government reduced the age eligibility for people on temporary graduate visas to 35 and shortened the length of time holders could stay in Australia down to a maximum of 3 years, previously six. Data showed the clampdown was having an impact. The number of temporary graduate visas granted dropped by 33% in the year to 31st January, with just 84,354 offers compared with 126,348 in 2024-25. There was a 43% decrease in the number of student visas granted in the same time period, 208,156 compared with 371,564. The Greens Deputy Leader and Higher Education Spokesperson, Maryanne Faruqi, said Labor was in a race to the bottom on migration with One Nation and the Liberals, and the fee increase would demonise and exploit international students. The Council of Australian Postgraduate Associations National President, Jesse Gardner-Russell, said the Australian job market was already exclusionary to temporary migrants trying to transition to skilled work, as many employers required permanent residency for graduate positions. It is the third time the federal government has increased the temporary graduate visa application charge since February last year. Doubling the cost of their ticket to play means that those who have already integrated into Australian society and want to contribute to growing our economy will be unable to participate, Gardner-Russell said. These rules need to be reversed. Back to you, Jean.
Well, many thanks, Andy. And now, of course, we're going overseas. So here is Jeff.
Good afternoon, listeners. So we're going to start in the Middle East. This is an article from a newspaper called Dawn, and it's concerning the effect that the trouble in the Middle East is having on school children. War shuts down classroom door on 52 million children, aid group says. Islamabad. At least 52 million school-aged children have had their education disrupted by school closures or a shift to online learning as violence in the Middle East and wider region entered its second week, the aid group Save the Children said. The Child's Rights Organisation said its calculation, based on the United Nations population data for children aged 5 to 17, showed the widespread impact on education as schools were damaged, closed or repurposed as shelters. The affected countries include Bahrain, Iran, Iraq, Israel, Jordan, Kuwait, Lebanon, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the State of Palestine and the United Arab Emirates. Across the region, home to at least 100 million children, schools have been destroyed or damaged, including 65 in Iran that were destroyed by airstrikes, according to the Iranian Red Crescent Society. As of early March, schools and universities in the United Arab Emirates, Qatar and Bahrain have also shifted to distance learning due to security concerns. In Pakistan, schools have been asked to close for the next 2 weeks to help conserve fuel, though exams will continue as scheduled, according to the Ministry of Federal Education and Professional Training. In every conflict, classrooms are usually the first to close and some of the last places to reopen, said Ahmed Alandawi, Save the Children's Regional Director for the Middle East, North Africa and Eastern Europe. Every missed lesson deepens the scars of war. Alandawi stressed that schools should be safe havens for children. Schools are protected sites and attacks on them could amount to grave breaches of international humanitarian law. The laws of war must be respected, he said. The disruption to education creates risks for students that go beyond academic performance, another official said. This conflict directly impacts not only students' academic performance, but their protection and ability to cope with increasing risks and instability, said Marianne Hodgkin, Global Head of Education at Save the Children. Save the Children said it is responding across the region to keep children safe and learning even when formal schools are closed. The organisation's plans include delivering education in emergencies activities to help protect children and support their well-being. So the war in the Middle East, the Iran-Israeli-US war, is causing massive disruption. Right, now we're going to go to an interesting story. It's from Brazil, and this is from an article from Investigate Europe, which is an online e-publication. This article is by Nico Schmidt and Leonardo Coelho. The headline is Blocked in Europe, Deployed Abroad. The facial recognition system monitoring Brazil's school children. As Europe tries to restrict AI technologies at home, systems developed on the continent are being rolled out overseas. Investigate Europe tracks how Europe-made biometric software has embedded itself into Brazil's education sector, with potential consequences far beyond the classroom. At Colégio Estadual, Professor Loureiro Fernandes, a public high school in the southern Brazilian state of Paraná, a class begins like any other. The teacher opens an app on their phone, holds it up, and takes several photos in the room. Within seconds, the images travel to a cloud server where a facial recognition algorithm detects each student's face, extracts it, and compares it against a database of biometric profiles. The app LRCO, Paranha, returns a list of names. Students identified in the photos are marked present. Those the system does not find are marked absent. This facial recognition software was built to identify close to 1 million children in Paranha each day. Since 2023, the technology has been deployed in more than 1,700 schools across the state, replacing the traditional roll call with an automated identification system rendered in moments. But the system can make mistakes. Ingrid Adam, a guidance counsellor at the school, says she has learned to expect them. One morning, a student who had been sitting in class discovered that in her student app, Escolha Paranha, she had been marked as absent. When Adam raised the issue with the teacher, his response was familiar. "I'm not marking her absent," Adam recalled him saying. "I'm using the camera roll call and it said everything was okay." If a student discovers a mistake, they are able to correct the record with the instructor. Until then, the system's judgment stands. For some students, a false absence is a bureaucratic irritation. For others, it could threaten their family's access to welfare. In Brazil, eligibility for the Bolsa Família program depends in part on school attendance, and in Paranha, such records are now largely generated by an algorithm. The recognition technology that makes this possible was developed in Europe by a Slovak company called Innovatrix. While not prohibited in the European Union, comparable uses of facial recognition in schools have been blocked by courts and authorities in multiple instances who ruled that children cannot meaningfully consent to biometric surveillance in the classroom under the EU's GDPR data protection rules. But in Brazil, where the Data Protection Authority only began issuing sanctions in 2023, and has handed down just a handful of penalties to date. Similar software can now scan hundreds of thousands of children each day. Privacy advocates call it regulatory arbitrage. European companies exporting the kind of surveillance tools that regional regulators have deemed too invasive for use on children. In April 2025, Paranha's public prosecutor, Marcos José Porto Soares, filed the first legal challenge, arguing the system violates Brazilian law. The case is still pending. Meanwhile, the technology is spreading to other Brazilian states, such as Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo, and even back towards Europe. In August 2019, the Swedish Data Protection Authority imposed a fine on the school board of Skellefteå, a small town in northern Sweden. A local high school had piloted an attendance system that used facial recognition software developed by a Finnish IT company to register 22 students over 3 weeks. The same basic premise now operating at scale in Brazil. The Swedish authority ruled that the experiment violated the GDPR. Attendance monitoring via facial recognition, the regulator found, was disproportionate and excessively intrusive. Attendance monitoring can be carried out in other ways, which involve less infringement of the student's integrity, the decision stated. At the heart of the ruling was the question of consent. The authority emphasised that school children cannot freely agree to surveillance technologies in the classroom. The relationship between the board and the students will generally be one of considerable imbalance, the regulator noted, describing attendance monitoring as a unilateral control measure where this inequality exists. A few months later, in February 2020, an administrative court in Marseille reached a similar conclusion. The court halted two pilot projects that would have installed facial recognition software access systems at high schools in Nice and Marseille. The judges struck down the experiment on multiple grounds. The regional government, they found, lacked the legal authority to implement such a system. The consent obtained from students was invalid, given the inherent power imbalance between schools and minors. The government had failed to demonstrate that facial recognition was necessary or served a substantial public interest. And the biometric system was manifestly disproportionate, the court held, given that less intrusive alternatives, such as badge-based entry, were readily available. The European Union has since moved to regulate the use of facial recognition and other related technologies with the passing of its landmark Artificial Intelligence Act in 2024. While not outright prohibited, the deployment of such systems in schools is strictly regulated, although attendance and registration tools are not explicitly labelled high risk. The legislation does not extend to monitoring the export of the technologies beyond Europe's borders. But they took a different path in Brazil. Across the Atlantic, officials have embraced the use of these systems, seeing them as drivers for development and efficiency. Paraná is Brazil's fifth most populous state, home to nearly 12 million people spread across agricultural plains, industrial cities and the sprawling capital of Curitiba. Its public school system serves more than 1 million students. In 2019, Renato Feder assumed control of the state's education department. A tech entrepreneur by background, Feder arrived with a clearly articulated vision, one he had laid out years earlier in his book, Carregando o Elefante. Brazil's education system, he wrote, was crippled by mismanagement and unbelievable waste on foolish projects, inefficiency, bloated administrative staff and corruption. Feder had built a reputation as a reform-minded executive, having helped transform the small electronics company Multilaser into one of Brazil's largest IT firms. In education, he sought to apply a similar logic, standardisation, measurability and the pervasive use of digital tools. Technology is here to stay to enhance the content taught in the classroom, Feder said after taking office. Under his leadership, Paraná's education system was digitised across the curriculum. Between 21 and 24, the state spent more than $153 million on private education platforms, according to a study by researchers at the Federal University of Paraná. Google Classroom became the state's digital learning environment. The Swiss company EF Education first provided English instructions through a platform called Inglês Paraná. The Australian company, Matific, built a mathematics platform, and the US company Quiz is, now renamed Wayground, supplied a quiz-based learning tool. The Education Secretariat did not stop at digitising lesson plans and homework assignments. It also set out to digitise something more fundamental, determining which students were in the classroom and which were not. I'm going to leave it there. Cheerio.
Well, many thanks, Jeff, but I think it's more than time for a quick break.
Are you a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station. It helps us remain financially independent and is an important part of our community governance.
It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
3CR, Radical Radio.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
We hope you're still listening to the Dogs program because we've come to the best part of our program, the great state schools. And we're going to hear from Dale about a very special school in Sydney that has been named on the HSC Most Improved list for the second year in a row. Over to Dale.
Thanks, Jean. South Sydney High School, named on the HSC Most Improved School list for second year in a row. When Janice Nielsen joined South Sydney High School as principal 7 years ago, turning around their HSC results was a top priority. Now, the Maroubra School is celebrating a major win for the second year in a row. On Monday, the Department of Education released the HSC Most Improved list, which detailed the schools showing the most growth in the numbers of students receiving the top three bands in the HSC. South Sydney High School is now one of only three schools in the state to be on the list twice in a row. The team since 2019 have worked incredibly hard, both in the classroom and out of the classroom in the community, to improve the reputation of the school and to improve results, Ms. Nielsen said. In 2025, 73% of the school's Year 12 students achieved results in the top three bands, a rise of 17 percentage points since 2019. how the school became one of the most improved. With the dedication of staff from the start, Ms. Nielsen said the school's more than 70 teachers were passionate about student success, a critical first step towards boosting their academic standing. They all wanted to improve the results and get that message out to the community, she said. Next was ensuring a strong learning environment. That's consistency, structure in behaviour management, and consistency and structure across teaching and learning. You can then talk about high expectations with high support, she said. Add on to that, fostering a deeper framework of values, manners, attendance, punctuality, respect, and citizenship. If you get that environment right, you can then focus on the academic part of it, Ms. Nielsen said. The hard work paid off, and South Sydney High School became one of 45 schools identified for their HSC academic improvement. It comes a year after the New South Wales government set system-wide academic HSC attainment and school attendance targets for all New South Wales public schools. Education and Early Learning Minister Prue Carr said the state was committed to championing academic excellence. These results show what can be achieved when teachers can focus their time and expertise in the classroom, providing high-impact teaching for their students, she said. It was not just academic results specifically that Ms. Nielsen was determined to turn around. In 2016, the school's enrolments were down to about 500. Now they are at almost 800. I always remember my first HSC group had 42 students, whereas now, last year's group was about 120 Year 12 students, Ms. Nielsen said. I think that's the goal of any principal, to improve academic results, school culture, student enrolment numbers. For recent students, they were not only privy to an improved learning environment, but also the chance to see a Netflix series created on their school grounds. Back in the day, the original 1990s Heartbreak High series was primarily filmed in the former school that existed on the same grounds as South Sydney High School, Moroba Bay High School, which was shut down in 1990. The rebooted series, which began in 2022, was filmed on the same Moroba campus, a decision Ms. Nielsen said came down to financial gain for the school and the arts industry opportunities for her students. The students quite enjoyed it, she said. There's a lot of careers and pathways in the entertainment industry, so there were some benefits there for us for sure. Ultimately, as a proud public co-educational school, Ms. Nielsen hoped the community would get behind celebrating the dedication of all students. I'm very proud of the team I've got, and most importantly, the students that have achieved it. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thanks very much for that, Dale. That's the Maroubra School still kicking goals, but now we've got a great state school. Over to Andy.
Thanks, Jean. And this week's great state school of the week is South Sydney High School. The principal's message. Welcome to South Sydney High School. I am proud to lead a school that is dynamic, forward-thinking, and truly cares about every student. At South Sydney High, we offer a diverse and comprehensive curriculum designed to meet the needs of all learners, helping them achieve outstanding academic results and unlock meaningful post-school pathways. Our commitment to future-focused learning means we continually embrace innovative approaches and adapt to meet the evolving needs of our students. Our passionate and dedicated staff work collaboratively to provide opportunities that develop essential skills like critical thinking, creativity, communication, and collaboration. At South Sydney High School, students are at the heart of everything we do. Our approach balances personalised support with a broad curriculum, ensuring every student can explore their passions and reach their full potential. Our learning approach. Our school uses explicit teaching. This means we clearly tell students what they are learning, why it is important, and how to do it step by step. Explicit teaching helps students understand new ideas by breaking them into smaller parts. Learning at our school is student-centred, inclusive and practical. We are committed to equity and access. We support all learning styles and needs. Our teachers use proven teaching strategies. They take part in ongoing professional development to stay up to date with best teaching practice. Our learning approach includes real-world learning, hands-on tasks, group work and exploring new ideas, technology to help students learn and build digital skills, flexible teaching, the right support for each student with a focus on well-being, and community connections through excursions and local programs. And now some facts and figures from the MySchool website. The enrolment, 796, and the ICSEA value, slightly above average, 1,037. Representative of a very diverse urban community. The upper 25% of parental income is 22% of students. 30% of students have parents in the second level of incomes, and the third quartile, i.e. below average, is 27% of students, and the lowest quartile of family incomes, 21% of students, with 43% having a language background other than English and 6% Indigenous students. The finances, recurrent grants from the Australian Government, $3.02 million, and from the New South Wales Government, $11.2 million. Private fees, etc., add another $339,000, and other private contributions, another $388,000. And that comes to $18,813 per pupil. The capital, $2.19 million over 3 years. Back to you, Jean.
Congratulations to South Sydney High School up there in Maroubra. Our time is gone. If you want to find out more about the Dogs, we have a website at www.adogs.info, and some very, very important information is going up in the next week underneath the High Court case, but more about that next week. So it's up to me to thank our wonderful producer, Dale, and her offsider, Amby, and also Sorrel and Jeff, and for all of us, including myself. It's bye for now.
Saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe here last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
3CR. Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.